And we're back. Welcome once again to another episode of Mike, Mike, and Oscar. The spooky season is well upon us, and we're taking another diversion, a small getaway from the Oscar sprint, that race that we always are constantly running here, and we're concentrating on much, much more important things. I am your co-host,
Mike.
You're
so happy about this.
I'm your co-host, Mike. One. This is co-host, also Mike.
Also Mike here. I have the song stuck in my brain for weeks now.
Yeah.
Perhaps months.
It's one of the best cinematic scores of all time, right?
It's very good. Now, the...
I said it's one of the best of all time, right?
The offshoots to the score get a little on my nerves.
Or the one we might be mentioning later in this episode?
Yes, yes. This one.
The one you might be hearing later in this episode. But we are doing a quick episode. We're going to start our Halloween franchise recap review today. But before we get there, we have some little business to take care of with hashtag 6 degrees of MMO. We waited about a little over a week this time. This is our third round of doing this. We wanted to connect George C. Scott to Michelle Yeoh. And we have a winner in the clubhouse, Michael.
A lot of awesome submissions, a lot of movies that tickled our fancy, made us laugh.
Maybe none more so than the one from our winner, which I think both of us have fond memories of, yes, but have not seen in probably decades.
Sentimental favorites,
yes,
galore. I mean, basically to our generation.
Oh, it's like the...
This answer was the perfect answer.
It was basically the movie of us as kids. The fat kids at the dance finally gets the girl that he dances with. You know, that's the story that we personally, at least I can relate to. This is my therapy session.
My grandpa also spoke like George C. Scott. He was a smoker for a while, and they had the same kind of delivery. You know, he was the old Italian guy,
right,
version of that. But yeah,
right,
absolutely.
Yeah, so it's a lot of worlds colliding together in this 6 degrees of MMO. Not something we planned on getting so personally attached to, but here we are. And it's all due to our listeners' creativity. Big shout out once again to all the submissions that we had. Like Mike said, very creative once again, very informative, very nostalgic for our purposes. But our winner this round, connecting George C. Scott to Michelle Yeoh, comes from Bad Reception Podcast-Mike at Bad Reception Pod. Here is his submission. George C. Scott to Chris Owen in Angus.
Yes.
Angus. Angus, a movie that Mike and I both adore and probably have not seen in about 20 years.
Great grandpa character there, yeah. And just he encourages his fat little grandson to get out there in the world, to play ball.
Be yourself, man.
Yeah.
What a message. Owen was also in American Pie going to Sean William Scott, so we have not only the Angus route, but we're taking George C.
Scott.
The
next stage.
And sullying his name even further.
Or the next step, as some might say, of
right,
Mike and I's lives.
Right.
Our movie-watching lives.
Progression, yes. Yeah. I really, really like this. Sean William Scott to Chow Yun-Fat and Bulletproof Monk.
Which is a staple in all stages of our movie-watching lives, because we always watch the great action flick.
I remember the marketing for that movie and being like, how is Sean William
this
Scott
is not
in this?
This is not a great action flick, but this is one of those that you and I both saw back in the day that we both rented at the Blockbuster, that we both enjoyed at the time that we rented it. And we had to
Isn't
see it.
Isn't that Stifler doing martial arts? Yeah, that was my reaction, but yes. And then Chow Yun-Fat to Michelle Yeoh, and of course, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which was probably the most famous Michelle Yeoh performance until Crazy Rich Asians, which we did cover in an Oscar
Which
sprint
is the
profile.
Next stage of our film watching
A little
lives
more
because
mature.
We're maturing. We're seeing the Academy Award movies. As I got into high school, I started watching all the Oscar movies.
We don't need the Michael Bay explosion pieces anymore, but we still need the ass kicking the roundabout way of going through all the action scenes. Yes.
It was another transitional movie for us.
Yeah, this one really is the tale of our upbringing in a way, but putting Angus in anything out of the blue, having not thought about that movie in some time, yes, really just warmed my heart.
Mike from Bad Reception Podcast, number one, great name. And number two, you and I are kindred spirits. you are one of the Mike spirit animals, perhaps. I mean, we're best friends now.
We are. One of us. You could do with that information what you'd like. But yes, be sure you're following Bad Reception Pod at BadReceptionPtion. POD. We are youth of a nation.
You should apologize. God damn it.
I apologize to Mike, that being his handle, and my being reflex every time I hear POD. But yes, that was the winning submission this month. connecting George C. Scott to Michelle Yeoh. But as always, we're going to give you our take as well. We came up with a few ourselves. Michael, you can go first. What did you have for your chain this round?
So George C. Scott was General Buck Turgeson in Dr. Strangelove. Now, this is a favorite movie of mine. Again,
that's
probably
where my first link starts, too. That's
very
amazing.
Awesome, awesome. So this is perfect. I love Kubrick movies, especially high school and college. So I wanted to do another kind of, you know, send up to all movies or books or music that I like.
Places
that
time.
Are favorites of mine in honor of our winner there at the Bad Reception Pod. So George C. Scott was General Buck Turgeson in Dr. Strangelove, which was directed by Stanley Kubrick.
I like it. Going right off the beaten path already. Good job.
Stanley Kubrick hid the screenplay in the deepest, darkest basement of his deepest, darkest house. And it was found somehow by Steven Spielberg. None of that's true, but some of it might be.
All right, it's a little behind the scenes.
I hope some of it might be. Anyway, Steven Spielberg decided to make the Kubrick script of AI, artificial intelligence, into a film.
I see what you're doing here. All right.
Now, the artificial intelligence featured Clark Gregg, who plays the superfan. Gregg is Agent Coulson in the MCU.
Yes.
And also happens to be in Choke, from a novel written by Chuck Palahniuk.
Wow. Look at you.
Chuck is one of my favorite writers. He wrote Fight Club, which was directed by David Fincher, who directed the Netflix original series Michael Mindhunter Season 1, one of my favorites. I've rewatched it a couple times.
I'm very impressed with
this. I'm a very disturbed individual because I watch the serial killer shows too many
times. Chalk it up to being October.
Anyway, Netflix original series Mindhunter Season 1 has a soundtrack that includes Albatross by Fleetwood Mac, like a sentimental favorite band of my parents and myself.
Yes.
I'm a little weirded out that I like music that my parents also really, really like. That they always really, really like.
We're old now,
but
it's okay.
True.
Yeah, that's
it. Just is what it is. I've accepted it.
Don't stop thinking about tomorrow.
Fleetwood Mac's song "The Chain" is also in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
In the best use of a song, a licensed material the MCU. Great scene.
Cameo in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 by Michelle Yeoh.
Look at that. That would. It's much more impressive than mine.
A lot
that
of
was
my
a great
things.
Job. You took a lot of different avenues. I think you might have just straight up lied to people talking about that Spielberg Kubrick connection, but that's okay. We're going to let that
it
go.
It was a dark, ominous script that I have attributed to Stanley Kubrick.
We'll let that go, but good job. And that's what we love, the creativity. If you're going to not be nostalgic, if you don't have an Angus to bring up in your holster, you might as well go through different mediums and different pathways like that. Great job there, Mike. Mine's much more simple. I'm going to be totally honest. This is one that my brother actually helped me out and brought to my attention, and so I'm going to give him all the credit. George C. Scott, again, in Dr. Strangelove with Peter Sellers, who, of course, was the Pink Panther in a Pink Panther movie with Robert Wagner, who is number two in the Austin Powers films. Austin Powers, of course, but having Scott Evil of Seth Green's character, who was in Rat Race, which obviously was the modernized update of It's a Mad, 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 Mad World, which
correct.
We just gave our All the Horror shout out to two girls on a bench last week. He was in Rat Race. Seth Green was in Rat Race with John Cleese, who was actually the Q character in Die Another Day with Pierce Brosnan. It was his introduction to the series, who of course was in Tomorrow Never Dies with Michelle Yeoh.
I enjoy all of those things.
Every word in that.
I'm glad we have a podcast.
Yes, I see it, of course, you, of the two of us, you much, much greater the winner this time.
I got weird because you've been getting weird.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it.
Your weirdness is rubbed
off. My brother helped me out doing exactly 6 degrees of something, but again, bad reception, Mike. The winner this month, George C. Scott, to Chris Owen and Angus. Owen to Sean William Scott in American Pie. Sean William Scott to Chow Yun-Fat in Bulletproof Monk. Chow Yun-Fat to Michelle Yeoh in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. At Bad Reception Pod, make sure you're following him and all that great creativity that he has. Congratulations. Michael, before we get into our Halloween review, we have another challenge, round 4, coming out. Hashtag 6 degrees of MMO. Spell it out. Use the hashtag, the pound key, SIXDEGREESOFMMO. What is the round 4 challenge?
Jamie Lee Curtis, Laurie Strode herself.
The final girl, yes, of course.
To Mike Myers.
I see what you're doing here, and I appreciate it. Now we're talking Michael Myers, the actor, the Canadian.
The actor, the Austin Powers
Wayne's World,
man.
Yes.
Now, this could be super easy. They could be in the same movie for all we know. I kind of tried to check. I don't think it happened, but it may have. Mike Myers could have been the gas station attendant in the remake of Freaky Friday, for all I know. He's wonderful.
Don't worry, he wasn't. I know that move. No.
He's wonderfully weird like that. Yeah. He could have had a lazy eye and with a Cockney accent.
You put the wrong emphasis on the wrong syllable. Nobody saw that movie. But listen, if they are in a movie together,
right,
you're probably not going to win if that's your submission.
Well, tell us, and tell us we're stupid, I guess.
Well, sure, we always like being told that. Well, yes, that's
maybe
a fair point.
Maybe we'll run off a couple of oneers on this next one.
Fair point, yeah, I like that.
If you have
that,
if you... Yeah, and then we'll get more people involved. But yeah, if we're geniuses, tell us that too. Here's the thing, and I wanted to test this theory, Michael.
Go ahead.
I have thought that the last few challenges have been super duper hard.
Yes.
And they've turned out to just make me look silly.
I think that's a credit to our listeners more so than thinking that the easy stuff will be hard or the hard will be easy.
And now I think this easy will be hard
right.
somehow.
Right. And I think we both agree that there's no doubt there's one movie they were both in, right? We just don't know it off the top of our
don't
heads
know.
And
I
haven't seen it.
I couldn't even go through the IMDb and find
right.
it.
Right, right. So
probably
maybe it's some student film from back in the early 80s when they were both kind of just getting their wings here as actors. But yes, Jamie Lee Curtis to Michael Myers, the performer, not the serial killer who we'll be talking about in upcoming episodes at length. That is your round four challenge for 6 Degrees of MMO. Be sure to use the hashtag 6 Degrees of MMO. The more creative, the better. The different, more different mediums you can go through, the better. If you can use directors, music videos, video games, go off the beaten path of just movies, the better. And we will highlight the winner the next time we do this game. Keep the submissions coming in. We love hearing from you guys.
Yeah, these are fun. Thanks.
All right. Let's hit the music.
Let's do it.
It's almost time, kids. The clock is ticking. Be in front of your TV sets for the horror-thon. And remember the big giveaway at 9. Don't miss it. And don't forget to wear your masks. The clock is ticking. It's almost time.
Were you just not fist pumping the entire time like I was in my chair listening?
I was fist pumping myself in the jaw. Trying to bite off my tongue. The words.
Fair and all. How dare you?
Oh, no.
I have yearly, every Halloween, I will just put that video on my social media. And I've gotten to the point where I've gotten aggressively mad at people. It's like, it's Halloween, motherfuckers! Like in all caps.
I'm not scared at all right now.
Yes! We are starting our Halloween franchise review, and before we take the dive into the Michael Myers and what he's been done and the John Carpenterisms of the world, we're taking the one movie that has literally nothing to do with any character in this world, though it is tangentially related.
At the end of our last recording session, Mike gave me like a 10-minute dissertation on the different timelines of Halloween and of the entire franchise.
Yes.
And this one was an outlier, as will be another later on in our recap here and our rewatch of the entire series. So this one is one you wanted to tackle early because it wasn't in the main storyline. And I think it's going to be a delicious review today. It's going to really...
I'm very happy. You're very excited about that. That makes me... This is actually, for horror movie buffs, they hold this one in high regard because even though, you know, it's kind of the ugly redheaded stepchild of the group because even though it's a Halloween movie, there's no Mike Myers, there's no Laurie Strode, there's no mention of anyone.
But I think this is an interesting transition from the Conjuring universe that we just did. We did the MCU and the Mission Impossible movies over the summer. I feel like this was an attempt, at least admitted by... Wikipedia, even though a half-hearted attempt, as you'll argue, an attempt at a bit of a cinematic universe and at an anthology here. And this is fascinating because we've seen The Conjuring do it right.
Right.
And we now see this do it wrong. And that's going to be a fun investigation.
I'll have you not besmirch the good name of John Carpenter and universe building anymore. Thank you very much. But yes.
However, I got a spec on that.
So how we're going to handle these from all upcoming, we're going to do the different timelines. Like also Mike just said, there's a lot of different variations and deviations about what actually is the actual through line for the Halloween story that's leading us up to this big remake coming out later this month. Right. Jamie Lee Curtis being reintroduced as Laurie Strode. We're going to tackle the timeline separately, and this one, Halloween 3, The Season of the Witch, is the only movie not to feature Michael Myers in the entire series. Mm-hmm. Though it is part of the Halloween, again, universe, as Mike's going to tell you, we wanted to go to this one quick. It'll be kind of a quicker episode, we think. And we hope. We have plans to do that. And we're going to just set up the scene with this one. We're not going to be as in-depth with what this means to the Halloween chain overall, just because, again, it's not as substantively connected to the Michael Myers character. But there is a lot to... good and bad, to say about this movie.
This is going to be fun.
We're going to start. Let's get it rolling right now. Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Michael, where are we starting?
Cast and crew. This one is written and directed by Tommy Lee Wallace, who was a high school friend of John Carpenter in Kentucky there. He was a production designer on the original 1978 Halloween.
One of the more fascinating IMDb profiles does Tommy Lee Wallace have.
Tommy Lee Wallace would go on to direct the Tim Curry as Pennywise the Clown TV miniseries of Stephen King's It. He'd also make 10 TV movies that shall not be named after
now,
that.
Now listen, I know a lot of you hold It and Tim Curry as Pennywise deep in your heart. I just rewatched it recently.
Yes.
Do not rewatch it. Let the memories, leave the memories alone, as the song says. Yes. The remake was great. The nostalgia of the original is great. There's no need to go back and rewatch
it. Tommy Lee Wallace knows how to scare children watching TV.
That's a great point. Perfect.
Based on this movie and that movie.
Yes.
Anyway, Halloween 3 stars standard white guy Tom Atkins as Daniel Chalice. I love the names in this.
Yeah. Oh. That's one of the... Okay, obviously you see how this is going to go for the review. It's just going to be me not being able to contain myself. But the names in this movie, they couldn't come up with, like, Smith, Jones,
Chalice.
What was the other? Bridgerig or Bringing or whatever?
Ellie Grimbridge.
Because that just flows off the tongue.
Oh, it's wonderful. Atkins is a recognizable actor from Lethal Weapon, Escape from... L.A. or New York, I don't remember. I think it's New York. And The Fog, working with Carpenter again there.
And Tommy Lee Wallace.
Yes. Stacey Nelkin is Ellie Grimbridge, as we just said. Nelkin is best known from Bullets Over Broadway or Broadbay.
Was Grimble too hard? Or like Hawthorne?
It's a bridge, but it's grim. It's a grim bridge. And it's hard to pronounce.
Yeah, that's my point. That's a terrible movie name.
Nelkin was also in Yellowbeard. Dan O'Herlihy, Michael, is Conal Cochran with
not
an
Colonel.
Irish...
Not Colonel Cochran.
Conal. Conal, top of the morning.
It's like
to
they
ya.
Just took darts and threw them at the alphabet. And those were the names they came up with.
There's some wicker man in my posse. God damn it, these names are great.
Could you just keep doing it with
great.
The whole accent the whole time, please?
O'Herlihy played the old man, that's his character title, in RoboCops 1 and 2. And he played Grig in The Last Starfighter, another childhood favorite of mine.
I've never seen The Last Starfighter.
Oh, you should. Yeah, you should.
I'm a bad person. I don't like admitting it.
Nancy Kies, who played Annie in Halloween 1 and 2, one of the babysitters that goes down. Down for the count there. Daughter of police officer.
Mm-hmm.
She is retconned here into playing Linda Chalice, the ex-wife of Atkins.
If memory serves me right, I think this is one of her last acting roles, too. I think she kind of faded from... I mean, she was in the big Carpenter movies, and then she just kind of stopped acting altogether for... I don't know if it's been forever or for a long time, but I remember looking that up one day and being kind of...
Yes, you're right. Yep. She didn't do a whole hell of a lot. I guess she got tired of being just...
Maybe she wanted to go fade out of the public light, do some family life stuff. Who knows?
Sure. I mean, she also committed sins where the entire audience full of people wants to kill you for. Just being a jerk, nagger, not listen to you on the phone.
She was just trying to get laid, man. I mean, we're all just trying to get laid.
I mean, in retrospect, we all like her more now, and we wish she had. She wishes she had the same reception now that she didn't have then. Oh well. Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, also stars Dirty Harry series veteran Michael Curry. Ralph Strait plays Buddy Kupfer. Jadine Barber.
Kupfer. Kupfer.
Kupfer. Kupfer, a chalice. J. Dean Barber plays Betty Kupfer. Brad Schachter. Look at the character name. Look at the actor's names. Brad Schachter plays Little Buddy. And yada, 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 Michael. Jamie Lee Curtis is the uncredited voice of the unenforced curfew announcer.
This is news to me. I did not know that.
Oh, good. All right. I was hoping cool. to give a nugget
yeah,
there.
Yeah, no, nice.
So, Mike, you have some specs before.
Yeah, let's do some specs. Halloween 3, Season of the Witch. Debuted around Halloween, October 22nd, 1982. So we're talking a good 36 years ago? Oh, wow. My God. I want to throw up. 36 years ago, written, directed, like also Mike told you, Tommy Lee Wallace, in both his directorial and screenwriting debut, but he, of course, had been a bit player to numerous Carpenter films, obviously, also Mike just told you, a friend of his from high school, such as portraying Michael Myers in the original Halloween for a bit, a ghost in 1980's The Fog, and even credited as the art director in Carpenter's Assault on Precinct 13 back in 1976. Again, if you love eclectic profiles, he's gotten a lot of titles throughout his career, through Carpenter for the most part on IMDb. Right. It's really a fascinating read. Season of the Witch has an R rating, a 98-minute runtime, produced by Deborah Hill Productions and the Dino De Laurentiis Corporation, which is not something I was familiar with, but it's a production company run by the man of the same name, Dino De Laurentiis, which ended up producing over 500 films and even won Best Foreign Film Oscar for 1958's La Strada. The company has become defunct as Laurentiis passed away in 2010, and the last titles to its credit were 2007's Virgin Territory and Hannibal Rising, which was the critically split... Yeah, Lecter prequel. But it does boast an impressive collection to its name amongst horror fans. Each of Hannibal and Red Dragon were produced in part by the company, as well as Halloween's 2 and 3 here, along with Evil Dead 2, Army of Darkness, and many other known horror names.
He was a poor man's Blumhouse of his day, or he was a rich man's Blumhouse of his day?
Maybe. You could make the parallel that he was definitely the foreign guy taking some chances bringing Italian cinema over to America.
I have a nugget about that.
Do you?
Coming up.
Oh, yes. Nice. Good to know.
A little teaser.
Maybe we should compare notes before we record. Distributed by Universal as well. Halloween 1's budget was a reported shoestring of shoestrings, which we'll get to in a future episode, but Halloween 2's was given significantly more respect percentage-wise, but was still a relatively paltry $2.5 million. This film, Season of the Witch, carried the same number. $2.5 million budget. So the implication to me is that though they were going full-fledged anthology with this one, you're going to get into that and the meaning behind it, they probably still expected it to bring in a profit along the lines of the first two Michael Myers films, I would think, each of which ended up a critical success and the box office at least 10 times their budgets. So going by that logic, you'd have to think that the 14.4 domestic box office that Season of the Witch did in theaters would be somewhat of a disappointment, even though it still made 7 times its budget, didn't hold up to the same standards as
right.
the first
still
two
made
Halloween
money.
Movies. Right. Though it's still a profit for the studio, and possibly even more surprisingly, its $6.6 million opening weekend was good for the fourth best horror movie opening ever at the time.
Oh, wow.
Horror being a relatively new genre that was perfected probably in Halloween 1. There was the M's of their days and the Peeping Toms before it.
My guess is the outcry after seeing this movie was pretty ferocious from the fans.
Probably. The scores do not treat it well because Halloween 3, Season of the Witch's numbers, not great. 4.7 IMDb rating on 34,501 reviews at last check, 43% Rotten Tomato score on 21 critical reviews, 9 positive, 12 negative, average critical score of 4.7 out of 10, so exactly the same number as the IMDb, according to critics, 25% audience score on 52,000 plus reviews from Rotten Tomato there with the average score 2.3 out of 5, a fairly respectable 50 meta rating. It's not great, but 50 is higher than I thought this movie would get.
Sure.
Though it was in fact nominated for a Saturn Award in 1983 for the illustrious category of Best Poster.
Best Poster.
Where it lost to E.T.
E.T. should be in anything, but definitely Best Poster. E.T. had a great poster.
One of the cinematically legendary posters.
Yes, people still hang that on dorm room walls.
Yeah, so all it was a matter of bad timing. This could have been the E.T. of its day if it came out a
almost,
year earlier.
Yeah, almost.
It was on the cusp. Go ahead, Mike. What do we have for production nuggets?
All right, here's the awesome thing about this movie. Like we said, it is an attempt at a cinematic universe. They ran with Sam Hain, the concept of a fall Halloween festival.
Oh, boy.
The occult motif. They tried to write a spinoff from that one word
written on the classroom wall with blood by a certain Schmeichel Schmeyers.
I can't wait for you to get to Halloween 5 if you didn't get your fill of Sam Hain from this one.
Oh, boy. Listen, producers John Carpenter and Deborah Hill would only agree to stay involved with this project if it was not a direct sequel to Halloween 2, meaning no Michael Myers. I was surprised to read that.
Yeah, they had plans. John Carpenter, I don't know if it's ahead of his time or if it was a money grab or what, probably some combination of the two, but he went into Halloween 1, reportedly, I mean, you could read about this throughout the years, but with the mindset of this being an anthology product. He only wanted the first movie. He was kind of cajoled into doing the one sequel, and then he said, that's it. I'm not doing Michael Myers anymore.
Wow.
Until this one kind of fell on its face, and he said, maybe there's money left in the Michael Myers thing.
It's fascinating because the way Conjuring sets him up with the monster, all right, that's a spinoff. The monster, that's a spinoff. This one sets it up with a concept of the occult, the Samhain, the festival, which is a little bit different, and they're playing on that concept. This one doesn't work. The Conjuring stuff does.
Yes.
It's fascinating. Anyway, they were pushing kind of for an anthology, a cinematic universe, like I said. So they were hoping for a bunch of spinoffs here, but after the box office, which still made money, and yet had those lousy critical reviews, as you mentioned, they dumped the idea and went back to Michael Myers 6 years later in the return of Michael Myers in Halloween 4.
Yes.
So filming for Halloween 3 took place in Loleta, California. The original writer was Nigel Neal. And after his mostly non-horror script, it was more of a like a thriller, sci-fi thriller script, owner executive producer Dino De Laurentiis, as Mike mentioned, ordered more blood and gore.
Oh,
and snakes and bugs.
Yeah, well, he got his snakes and bugs.
This made Neal so upset with the project that he asked to have his name taken off, which of course happened.
We don't want you anyway, Neil.
So nobody was happy with this one and nobody had fun. I think we
should that was the original tagline.
I want this whole review from here on out to be structured as explaining to me why the fuck this movie is entitled Halloween 3 Season of the Witch.
I'm glad you bring that up, Mike.
Because that is perhaps the most befuddling
There's a very aspect easy of this whole answer. Thing. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
It's ridiculous. It's one of the biggest problems I've had with the Halloween franchise. I have no idea where the witch comes in. I suppose this the story of the timeline of how the Cochrane character is so convinced that he's from a legacy of the occult and witchcraft, that's kind of the tie-in.
Right.
That's the best I could do.
Yeah, it's close to a popular title of a great song / George A. Romero movie.
Right. Well, the outro to this episode is going to be Donovan's Season of the Witch, so they did that well, at least.
Okay.
That's
a good song. Okay, so you have the plot here, Mike. You're going to get through this quick, then we're going to kind of break it down.
So the plot isn't an intensive one. So here's the IMDb synopsis. Kids all over America want silver shamrock masks for Halloween. He's a doctor, by the way. This guy's a doctor. Fine. Dr. Daniel Chalice seeks to uncover a plot by Silver Shamrock owner Conal Cochrane.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty much the long and the short of it. Dr. Daniel Chalice is a doctor, works at a hospital, deals with a patient coming in who gets murdered under his watch by this robotic-type occult member.
Yes.
That patient that gets killed, that victim, he just happens to run into the daughter of that victim at a local bar, leaves his family, his wife, and his children.
It's his ex-wife.
Fine.
Yeah, ex-wife.
Fine. Leaves his family behind immediately on a suggestion that we should maybe go investigate this Silver Shamrock
company.
There's
some incentives. He wants to, you know, have a little
hanky-panky.
Hanky-panky there.
And he does, with the most beautiful lovemaking scene in cinematic history.
I watched it on AMC. I was shortchanged.
You didn't miss anything. They don't show. It's just the setup.
Oh, really?
No, there's nothing. Yeah. They go into the desert. They're on the tails of the Silver Shamrock Company, and they discover this deceitful. It is such the 80s James Bondian trope of Dr. Chalice gets in too deep. The bad guy, Cochrane, has him tied up and thinks he's winning him over and reveals the entire plot for his world domination
the
plan.
The evil monologuing in this movie was essentially the greatest I've ever seen.
So essentially, the idea is Cochran, who has become one of America's richest people through selling these Halloween masks.
As one does.
Of course. That old chestnut.
big industry out there.
Used and honed power from one of the Stonehenge rocks that, by the way, he has imported to his Silver Shamrock factory.
Yes.
To activate this magic, essentially, in these masks. I like how you're just agreeing with this. Like, it's of course.
Yeah, naturally.
Yes. To activate the power in these masks that once this video plays, which was our opening song here to this segment, once this video plays on TV, it's going to activate the masks that the children will be wearing.
And turn all their brains into snakes and bugs.
Exactly. And that's the plot.
And also robots with goo bellies of yellow goo.
Those are like the henchmen. Yes.
So, now, I love this watch. Okay. I will be honest with you. This is awesomely bad to the T. There's a lot
this
of
is the definition. Yes.
Best and worst here, Michael. I don't know which you want to tackle first, but I have a litany. I have a list that I want to riff and have fun with based on best and worst. What do you think first?
I want to start with best, but let's start with worst because I think it'd be more fun.
Okay, so here we go. So if the choking gray-haired suit guy in the very first scene after the old man is running, or
the victim,
guy,
yes. Yeah.
He's running. He's going to be the dad of the girl and the protagonist.
Which, by the way, the story opens with this guy running away from a car hunting him down.
Right.
How much of a head start was he given that he was that far ahead of a motor vehicle?
He ran through wooded areas, down hills. I think that what Tom Atkins does later in the movie, because he goes to the same car shop. So this man runs to the car shop and he tells the owner that they're going to kill us all. And he has a mask and he gets into a brief fight. With one of these goons.
The briefest of fights.
We don't know it's a goo belly yet, but it's a robot goo belly guy.
I like how we're going to just refer to them as goo bellies.
Who's like a goo belly. He's definitely a goo belly. And
I think you and I are goo bellies.
Somehow he falls strategically in a spot where he can pull out an anchor on a chain holding a car from rolling.
Which just so happens. Now, this was the cinematic disciple, or I guess the ancestor, of the scene in like Austin Powers where the thing's slowly rolling towards the guy. Yes. And he's like, no! For now, like 15 minutes.
Right. So this guy could easily just flop to the ground. He could tilt one way or the other. He
could probably stop the car with his hand.
He could probably just lean back slightly.
Right.
Lean back slightly because the car's going so slow that he would be fine. He could probably just lean back and keep choking the guy.
I love the 80s.
But in a noise that sounds like a poof, he is killed, dead.
That's it. He's done.
He's finished.
Because not a good henchman.
The midsections of these robots are just very vulnerable. It is their vulnerable spot.
Almost like it's a design flaw.
Yes, it's a design flaw. So that's really awesomely bad and wonderful to me. All right, so Tom Atkins. Michael.
That's our approach. Are our worst scenes really our best scenes?
I love it all. I love it all. I really do.
Same here. I'm glad you took to it.
Yes,
okay.
Tom Atkins has a dark brown mustache and light brown hair. I just wanted to point that out.
I knew that was
he's a doctor. I'm upset. Set with it, but it's also kind of cool because it's a metaphor for the rest of the movie.
Sure.
Another bad guy / hitman finally kills this old man.
Yes,
father
in the hospital.
In the hospital, the hitman kills him by deviating his septum.
I don't think that's what happened.
He gave him Wicked Witch of the West nose. He gave him witch nose. That's why it's called Season of the Witch.
Oh, okay. I thought he plucked out his eyes, but.
No, he pulled the nose, the what do they call that, the roof of your nose?
Sure, the bridge.
The bridge of your nose. He pulled the bridge of his nose out.
So maybe it was supposed to be Season of the Bridge.
Season of the Bridge.
Parentheses of that
But
guy's
he gave
nose.
Him Wicked Witch of the West nose. Like every witch has a big septum.
Right, right.
Is that a septum? I don't know. It's a bridge.
You got to ask Mr. Chalice, Dr.
We have
Chalice
a bridge.
Here.
So there's a line, where do you want to sleep, Dr. Chalice? That's a dumb question, Ms.
Now, this
Grimbridge.
Deserves all the setup. So, Chalice has met this Ellie character, who's the daughter of the victim in the opening scenes.
Right.
The guy's killed on his watch. He's really harrowing, having trouble with it. He's in the bar, and he meets this Ellie Grimbridge
who
character.
Who was told that he's a drunk doctor who always drinks at this bar.
Right. Right. So, they meet. She convinces him to go on little more than a, hey, you want to do this? They're trying to figure out their sleeping situation in the motel by the Silver Shamrock Factory.
Yes.
And he's being a gentleman. He's like, listen, I'll get another room. And they're cosplaying as a married couple to fool everyone. So she's like, that wouldn't make sense. And he's like, I'll sleep in the car. It'll be better than the floor. And she's like, well, where do you want to sleep? They have not flirted. There has been zero sexual tension at all up to this point. And she says, well, where do you want to sleep? And he goes, well, I think that's a stupid question, Mrs. Grinberg.
So this is a male fantasy. This is
a writer's fantasy.
Zero foreplay.
Oh, yeah, right to work.
Just right to work.
Right to work.
And this screenwriter named Nigel, who wrote the initial script, I guess this was kept in.
He kissed his fingers after he wrote that scene.
I'm guessing he
was a
divorcee, and this is his fantasy of meeting a young, beautiful, whatever, 20-something.
How are we supposed to root for this guy? Like, yeah, it's his ex-wife. Oh, he's obviously he still has feelings for his ex-wife the way they play off each other. Correct. The kids are involved.
He is a sin-committed ex-husband. He's a terrible ex-husband.
I was rooting hard for Cochran.
He is a jerk on the phone. I am rooting against him to die throughout this movie. Correct.
Easily.
All right, so this is hilariously dumb. The bad guy immediately tells Dr. Chalice his entire evil plan later on in that movie. Again, the best evil monologuing, the worst monologuing.
It's like every parody of every James Bond villain ever.
Is there any reason Cochran doesn't have his goobots kill Chalice immediately like every single other character who just gives him the most minor inconvenience up till this point?
Or just like have a knife held to his throat while you're explaining it. If he moves, kill him.
Why'd explain it? There's just every other character. Oh, this, you know, toy owner might have uncovered something. Oh, this hobo is out after curfew and he talked to somebody who is slightly prying into my goings on.
But you, the most capable protagonist in this movie so far.
You have to be kept alive.
I'm going to tie you to a chair. We're going to see what happens.
With restraints that are not great. You can hop in that chair and kick the shit out of that TV set. But I put the mask on you, it looks kind of cool.
So yes, Cochran thinks he's going to have, he's setting up Chalice to die, putting a mask on him, tying him to a chair. Chalice escapes that to go find Ellie, who's in the same factory.
Right.
Cochran sees this happening, and it's the most lackadaisical. He's in the South Corridor. Go get him. There's no sense of urgency here. No. You have this plan involving a Stonehenge magic to take over the world and do a mass suicide, essentially. And you, the one guy that could screw it all up is on the loose in your facility. And your response is, yeah, we should do something about that.
Maybe get him at some point during this finale. No, it makes no sense. I mean, these type A personality villains are just so anal retentive by any little detail that gets off plan. So they send their army of goobots to cut off all these loose ends to the point where you send a goobot to a hospital to in broad specter of everybody, kill this man.
And by the way, that goobot that killed the guy at the beginning is like the only person in that hospital at the time that isn't a patient or works there. Right. Like, somebody should have looked at the tapes and been like, who's this guy?
In an essential montage in front of everybody, he puts on the black gloves. Then he just nonchalantly wipes the blood off onto a curtain while the nurse watches him. Yeah. Then he stalks his way outside to the car, being chased by Dr. Atkins, Super Doctor.
Yes.
And blows himself up by pouring gasoline on himself.
Of course.
And nobody is supposed to think this is a little suspicious.
The police in this town is really awful. They are not doing their jobs.
Almost as bad as the Haddonfield police, but we'll get to
that. Yes.
Anyway, but
and by the way.
Yes.
If a man becomes one of the most successful businessmen in America selling trinkets and masks, and every kid has a mask, and he's made his fortune off that, and he's just churning out masks, and that's how... Where's the FC... Like, where is the SEC, the FCC? They bought timing on every television channel. Where's the government intervention here? Can we have somebody looking this factory over that has in big red letters final processing that nobody is allowed to go into the room of?
A little ominous.
Can we have some guy with a checklist there? Maybe this is illegal.
Also, I think, you know, the entire globe would hunt down the missing stone from Stonehenge. I think that would happen.
How that's a one line. You wouldn't believe the cost we had to get this here.
I think the British government would have freaking James Bond and the entire MI6 on your ass.
So, Dr. Chalice escapes, gets Ellie. He's trying to cause some commotion with this plan now that he's infiltrated Cochran's HQ and avoided all the goo bellies.
Yes.
His big way to, I don't, He walks up to a control panel
right
in the middle of the fucking room where everybody is.
And he's sneaky.
Everybody just has their backs turned to him. He goes to the main glowing control panel and hits play on the commercial. You're telling me we have this big, bad, evil guy right. who has perfected the technology to make Goobot-centrics, armored guards that protect him. They have brains of scientists. There are many men in white lab coats. Nobody knows how to stop a commercial that you're playing later that night anyway.
They're all behind computers. They're all behind them. It makes no sense. It's wonderfully nonsensical. All right, so now we have the kid before this.
I jumped the gun.
No, that's fine. He sees the kid.
I don't want to get the narrative.
This young child named Little Buddy, who's given a backstory, who's given a character name. Yes. It's brutally murdered inside of a pumpkin head, and his brains are turned into bugs and rattlesnakes. Now, most people, that would assassinate your plot, and everybody would walk out of the movie theater when a little child is killed in a happy, fun way.
So here's
in a theater.
Here's my thought on that.
Yeah, this was a little problem.
This little buddy is the son of the best salesman you have.
Right.
Okay.
He's disobedient to his parents, which is a moral.
You're right. You should. That's
his deadly sin. Yeah, right. Yes.
And it is a horror movie. But why would you go out of your way to, if you want to distribute masks to as many kids as possible, why are you killing your best salesman? And his family.
True. That's a little... Well, because I guess he thinks the master plan's about to happen.
It's all done. It's already done what he's doing.
He just wants to show off to the super doctor.
Fair. Okay.
His nemesis, which he has, you know, conjured out of thin air. This man must be my nemesis because he is me with a cooler stash. He's slightly younger me with a cooler stash.
He's me with a budget for Just for Men.
Right. So we have the evil plan at the heart of it all. To use robots / little pieces of Stonehenge rock put into the caps or whatever the logos on the masks.
Yes. Beautiful scene beforehand, by the way, where the woman's doing the old 80s thing where she's tinkering with technology she shouldn't get know. Yeah. All right.
Best scene. Yeah. great scene. So more evil monologuing. But why would the Stonehenge kill the bad guy at the end?
You think he would have had something planned for that? A failsafe, maybe.
Yeah, but I understand why it would kill everybody else.
I don't.
Because, well, but essentially, when you get one of those super bad buttons, those evil buttons,
right.
in your vicinity, a laser shoots out of the rock, as
right.
it did to lady face
sure.
later in the motel.
Which so why is it using him as a conduit to go through the halo of the bad people behind him?
Does he have some kind? We don't know.
I don't think that was thought through.
Okay, all right, so here's getting into my really, something that made me angry in the finale of this film.
Sure.
With a phone call, and he's been terrible with phone calls throughout this movie.
Yes.
He can't get his ex-wife to throw something away.
He blows off his ex-wife hardcore. So he's like, I'm going to a meeting. I don't know when, where, bye.
He is awful on the phone. He accomplishes nothing on the phone.
Agree.
Middle-aged man, divorcee. He is able to stop TV stations from airing a ad bought and paid for by the largest corporation with it's a special ad, Michael,
okay.
because it's an advertisement that is giving away big prize at this certain
right.
time.
And it's on every TV station. Now, even back in the 80s, there was
still... Which is three TV stations.
Right. There was a couple TV stations. He makes one phone call to get
sounding this like a crazy lunatic
with
maniac.
With zero evidence to get this ad, which has probably cost millions of dollars,
right.
pulled from multiple broadcast stations.
Two.
Except for one. On one phone call in 5 minutes, they're like, I think this crazy guy on the phone's got something here.
You sound credible. You said your name was Doctor, wasn't it? Dr. Chalice, that sounds extra fancy. I'm going to believe you and take this off the
air. We're going to have our accounting department refund the check right now.
This commercial is going to kill every kid. It's going to turn their brain into bugs and snakes.
I want to call ABC on air right now and just see where I can get to getting anyone in their marketing department. Unbelievable.
Unbelievable. It's terrible, but it's great. It's also the logic that I love, which is the same logic of the sequence before this, where as he is blowing up the evil lair, with his super buttons dumped onto the world's biggest computer at the time, which somehow makes the conduit from Stonehenge into lasers everywhere, killing all the bad guys and blowing up the evil factory.
But not Cochran. I mean, didn't use Cochran's...
Later, yeah. And he's doing this with Stacy Nelkin's character of Grimbridge, who he has freed, and she is on his team.
Yes.
So again, like a fantasy slash nightmare of any divorced middle-aged man, you know, once he thinks she's on his team, once he thinks this could be something.
We're a team now.
We're a team now.
We've made love. We have a future together. Yeah. No.
She is an evil robot goobelly who has to fight him in multiple ways with multiple appendages, Michael.
Here's my take on that. I think she entered into contract negotiations for this film and was like, I'll do it. Right. But I want to make all those Michael Myers comebacks at the last second seem like nothing. I just want to be unkillable and just keep coming at this guy because it is. She gets like her head chopped off, gets her arms chopped off, and the best part is the score keeps doing the every time she comes.
I love that sequence so much. I really love it. But it just makes no sense.
It's so funny. It's like Will Ferrell's character. I'm still alive. I think I need some antibacterial cream.
It's the early Austin Powers 2, Spy Who Shagged Me. Vanessa turns out to be a fembot all along. Yes, there's no reason for it.
We knew all along, sadly.
So it's awesomely bad. All right, so can we get into some bests here, Michael?
I think we covered all of mine.
I
her being unkillable was my best scene.
That was great.
And just keep coming back with less appendages. Like, it's just a flesh wound.
Yes. Okay, so I love a lot of little things in this film. Here they are. I thought that was serious horror when the you don't know he's a goobot at the time blows himself up in a car. Like, I thought this was like serious cult movie or allegiance, loyalty from a bad guy.
You thought it was just a person doing it, not like a robot. Yeah.
Right, that's got to be serious loyalty. The most serious loyalty, just blowing himself
up. Drink the Kool-Aid, yeah.
And I like how they unravel that plot line of, no, it's a robot, and then he's got his lab attendant just researching the remains
also
from the fire.
Zero security in that building.
And she's like, somebody's got to be doing some foul deeds here because this is nothing but gears.
This is a motor. Yeah, this is no human remains here at all.
That was great. Yeah. I loved it. I love that whole sequence of reveals. The Michael Myers meta joke, not jokes, but meta-ness of their
universe building.
Halloween, the movie Halloween trailers on the TVs during
times,
this movie.
Multiple times through this movie, you see clips. There's a network.
Loved it.
There's a channel that's going to show the Silver Shamrock ad at 9 o'clock for the big giveaway to be the big master plan to kill all the kids.
Right.
But before that, they're showing the movie Halloween on the network. So that implies that Michael Myers isn't part of this universe as a real person. He is, in fact, the first Halloween movie, at least, was a movie within this universe. So Laurie Strode, that means Jamie Lee Curtis exists as a person in this universe and not Laurie Strode.
True. And it's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling.
I have no idea the implications of it or what they were actually going for or if they knew what they were doing, but it exists.
Okay, so more little things I loved here. I love that he's a raging alcoholic, and he has to bring a six-pack of roadies of Old Milwaukee for his road trip there with hot daughter. I love that so much. Roadie can't leave without the roadies. I'm a raging alcoholic. Here we go. All right, so all the people in the town have cult follower eyes. They are some of the best cult follower eyes I've seen in a cult follower movie in a while.
Even the creepy motel owner, where he was loved like, it. Oh, you don't want to worry about that. Come on over here now.
He's Irish. Also, for some reason.
Yeah, I gave him a southern accent. I'm sorry.
That's, the curfew is creepy as hell because it's not even dark yet.
And it's not hinted at really at all. It's just like, we got to get off the streets. Everybody inside.
Yes. Everybody 6 p.m. Inside. Everybody knows to get inside. And it's creepy as hell. I love that as a touch for Santa Mira there. This company town, as one might say. And we get Jamie Lee Curtis announcing it. I love that little nugget.
Now.
Right.
Since we've established that Jamie Lee Curtis is in fact a real person in this universe,
right,
playing a role of Laurie Strode in the Halloween movie, wouldn't people question, hey, doesn't that curfew voice sound like Jamie Lee Curtis?
It's a distinct voice.
Is she an actress that is playing a role? Is Jamie Lee Curtis part of the Silver Shamrock Company?
They wanted to get her away from it because they uncredited her after this was done with post-production.
Well, they have to keep her in hiding.
Right. So the kills in this movie are phenomenal.
Yes, they're great.
Those two suits just rip off the drunk hobo guy's head.
Yep.
They just, they're goo bellies. They rip off his head.
Like it was a fucking popsicle.
And yeah, I mean, we're evil men to relish in these such things. But this was crazy. You're like, whoa. I'm turned into a 1990s grunge hippie slash pothead.
Sure.
And I loved every second of that. Now, when the laser, this is the other kill I loved, when the laser shoots out of the Stonehenge button and blows off that woman's face, yeah, like so, through her face.
So the woman, the wife of the best salesman there is toying with a hairpin and trying to, she finds the silver shamrock button and right. she's trying to like play with it to see what's, if there's anything inside
That's a cool little rock.
Yeah.
Taped with masking tape to the button.
And she hits it in such a way that the laser fires at her, and it is a legitimately frightening scene.
It's terrifying because she is trembling, realizing what, and touching her face, yeah. realizing what she has done to her face. This is a great model of a face that has been blown asunder with a laser before she is able to die.
I guess it's not his wife. It's just some other person.
No, it's, right? Yeah, it's the other person that owns another little convenience store. It looks exactly like the wife who I confused.
Right.
Of that's the buddy.
I got confused as well.
Little buddy's mom.
So it's not the salesman's wife.
The Kupfers. It's not the Kupfers. But it's the little, you know, single serving friend that.
By the way, she's dead. There's a big conspiracy to get her out of the motel. Zero follow-up from that point on about
great
her.
Primal horror, though. That is a scary scene.
Oh, yeah.
Bugs crawling out of her eyes.
And good practical effects, too, because that's not a green screen or anything with her face. That's just terrifying.
It's cool. The sequence of these gross horror reveals is pretty good because, like The World's End, you get these goo bellies. You don't know that these hitmen are goo bellies, but they happen to be goo bellies, yeah. Michael. And that's a crazy fight scene where he immediately kills one of these by just tassling with them or wrestling, and then punching one in the stomach and goo. It's a goo belly.
It's all
great.
Split pee when you're inside that torso. Yeah.
So I also love that he's forced to watch Halloween 1 while he's tied down to the chair, which
yes.
is great.
Yes.
There's no conceivable way he can get out unless those restraints aren't very tight.
Absurd. Absolutely absurd.
A metaphor for us movie lovers, Michael, he does not have to do the Daniel Kaluuya escape from a harrowing escape from Get Out. He will do and that's not a spoiler, I'm just alluding to it. He will do the, I'm going to roll my chair
yes.
over and freaking scissor kick this TV through the restraints.
Why does every bad guy tie the protagonist to a wooden chair? Why not a metal chair? Because you think from movies, you know that all they got to do is roll backwards and that chair is going into 17 pieces.
But again, we're discussing my best scenes here because as flimsy metaphors go that I love to celebrate, this is movie makers in the 1980s saying, TV, fuck you. Loved it.
Wow. You got deep there. Very good.
So I love this. I love this. I love this. So he flips the mask over the camera, by the way, before he's out of the restraints with a slight backhanded flip of the wrist. A backhanded flick of the wrist.
He's athletic.
He nails this mask, which has a neck hole that isn't that wide.
No.
And that is rubberized, so it's kind of converged
right,
at the bottom.
No.
And he flips it over the camera in one little flick of the wrist.
See, the board exam to become a doctor in the 80s was actually an athletic endeavor.
The most coordinated. So maybe he can do the beep, bop, boop on those computers.
It had nothing
later.
To do with knowing medicine and everything to do with completing a Ninja Warrior tryout track.
Right. And by the way, you said it. Your favorite scene is also my favorite scene. Fighting Goobot Ellie Grimbridge.
I couldn't get enough.
Is
she just, she literally comes back, what, three separate times?
Loved it.
Oh, every, just nonstop.
The arm attacking him and he's just like, and then everything attacking. I'm rooting for him to die in that scene.
Suck on it, Cloverfield Paradox. That's how you do a straight hand.
Yes, I have more on the Cloverfield Paradox coming up because this is going to keep going, Mike, because we have to do where this fits in the Halloween universe.
It doesn't. So we're going to tie all these in and kind of start and end the through lines. But again, that's why we did, as we close in on an hour now, a quick episode.
You hate me so much.
A quick episode of this movie. Well, we had the first 15 minutes were 6 degree stuff. So,
right.
But this is a standalone property in the Halloween, any Halloween timeline.
Right.
It's doesn't really offer much. You know, the bad guy keep coming back. That's already been done in the first two movies. The bad antagonist that's just bloodthirsty and wants to just kill. That's Michael Myers. That's already been established. There's not much here outside of the unique universe building, which I don't even know was intentional or not. kind of giving a nod to the Carpenter, first two Carpenter films being played on TVs throughout this movie. That's kind of where this is separated and a unique property.
Fascinating. And it's fascinating how Nigel, the writer,
yes,
took his name off of this after he tried to do like an Invasion of the Body Snatchers meets George A. Romero, whatever, David Cronenberg 80s movie.
I wonder if that would have had any success anyway, because, and again, we only had the first two Halloween movies at the time, and those were, they weren't bloody, gory, you know, torture porn, but they were killed. It was a killer that wanted to kill. I wonder how taking such a deviation from that path and going straight sci-fi, straight body snatchers, that right, type of thing. I wonder how that would have been received by a crowd that obviously was already expecting more of the same from the first two movies.
And yet we've seen this kind of business model, this Halloween 3, yes, Halloween 3 Season of the Witch business model, or at least modus operandi, work later on in the Cloverfield franchise. The Cloverfield franchise with 10 Cloverfield Lane, that was a script written as a chamber piece standalone horror film that was then retconned, or whatever you want
to be part of the universe.
To be,
yeah,
part of the Cloverfield universe. Same with the Cloverfield Paradox.
I would ride the coattails on that idea and say American Horror Story probably learned from this as well. Because every standalone season in American Horror Story, it's an anthology type storyline. There's, right, there's little, I mean, there's cohesion now that we're in season 8, I think. They're bringing it all together, but 1 to 2, 2 to 3, 3 to 4, those were standalone properties, and they didn't really have a whole lot to do with one another, even though there was some sharing of talent between the films, much like in this one.
So it is a Nigel Neal script floating around there, like the God Particle script of the Cloverfield Paradox, mm-hmm, that would become the Cloverfield Paradox. So that's one way to do business. The other way is to have James Wan in charge of everything, and he just, you know, comes up with one deliciously evil monster after another to make more movies about.
They probably should have given him this franchise, even though he would have been like a baby at this point.
Michael, I just want to finish up here with the themes that are just so wonderfully ambitious.
You found themes, huh?
I love Nigel Neal as a person. I know he is divorcee with a lot of complexes.
You feel like you know him as a kindred spirit.
He is speaking directly to me. The layer of subtext is not all there. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was stripped from him. Maybe he had 14 layers. Mm. And in his script that he took his name off of, which I can relate to, maybe he had more. But Michael, these themes are ambitious. I think back to Won't You Be My Neighbor. The commercials for these Halloween masks remind me of the evil kid TV that Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and that Fred Rogers pointed out for us about the dangers,
wow,
of the institution of the patterns of consumership.
Yeah, and how TV should be used as a tool for education and it's just being used for mess.
This
television is the opiate of the masses.
This entire plot turns kids' brains
to mush. Literal mush.
Well, snakes and, yeah, bugs mush.
Yeah.
Worse than mush. Snakes and butt. That's a literal metaphor.
Yeah.
But it's saying quite a lot, Michael. All right. Metaphor number two. Adultery. The sin of adultery or the sin of divorce. The death of the American family is what causes this impotent doctor of a husband, ex-husband, to just fail to save his own children, to save the American family, to save all American families at the end of the day here, Michael.
I mean, sure, but he suffers no personal repercussions for his actions.
Well, he knows it's established that his kids
his
have
kids
those
have
masks,
the masks, yeah,
and his kids are
but
going
at no
to
point
die.
Does he ever reference that this might impact his kids.
Well, he's trying to get
right.
The
he's trying to save, yeah.
The
right. He's trying
they
to
may
save everyone at large.
Right.
But I didn't even remember until you brought it up just now the personal implication of what he was doing. But yeah,
well, it's fascinating that he, out of his way, while he's, you know, sneaking and lurking around the facility of the Dr. Evil Lair, there he calls his ex-wife, who of course just goes yap 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 yap, is such a, and it's the worst scene. She is like the most stereotypical badgering,
yeah,
woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, terrible stuff. And yeah, that's fascinating to me. But I think this all said, at the end of the day, Michael, that we need the return of Michael Myers.
Badly, yes. I would say. But yes, this was, again, we went long. We had the 6 degrees stuff at the top, but
oh,
this was its standalone property. It's why we wanted to attack it first. So let's give you guys a means of what to expect from us coming up. First of all, congratulations to us for being the only podcast in history for going an hour on Halloween 3 Season of the Witch.
We are insane people.
But secondly, we're going to treat the seriousness of this franchise where it's deserved. Mm. Halloween 1, the 78, and the immediate follow-up in 81, Halloween 1's 2 and H2O are probably the biggest, most important through line that this franchise offers. And they certainly share the most with what's coming up in the David Gordon Green reboot, sequel, remake, however you want to classify it. So we're going to give those each their own episode worth of content.
Might be a quick-isode, might be a half-isode, might be a whole-isode.
Yeah, we're going to see where it goes with that. But those are the three that really have the most substantively, from a movie-making standpoint, that we can really sink our teeth into. The narrative structure is really well done. There's a lot we want to say about those. That said, there are some lowlights in the Halloween franchise as well that we want to put a spotlight on, much like we did here with Halloween 3. Season of the Witch. There are some other Halloween installments that are more of the ambitious side with their storytelling and what they pulled off and put on screen. We're going to give those their proper due as well, though the tone may not be treated with as much reverence as the Halloween 1s, 2s, and H2Os we're going to do.
Right.
So we're going to give the next three Halloween episodes you hear from us are going to be standalone episodes concentrating on the through line, the Laurie Strode through line, we'll call it.
Yes.
Halloween 1, Halloween 2, H2O. That leaves 4, 5, 6 Resurrection, and the Rob Zombie remakes that we're going to attack in some way coming up as well. Probably going to give you a little more comedic value in those. We know you're going to be inundated with Halloween stuff this month. That's the nature of the podcast game. We know The Ringer is doing their own standalone thing with the Halloween franchise.
But it's overproduced a little bit, though. I listened to that this morning.
It's not what we're giving you.
It's not what I'm used to from The Ringer. Agreed. Also, like, The Ringer puts out great stuff. We look up to them. We think totally. They're phenomenal. And yet this was like this strangely awkward thing.
It was like a serial podcast.
Yeah.
Like the podcast serial, more like a storytelling. But
I did not enjoy it. I kind of had it on in the background while I was preparing this early this morning. And I listened to it twice and it hit me wrong both times.
You weren't crazy about it. So I think that's a good thing because
we're better.
We're giving you something maybe a little more relatable, maybe a little different.
Yeah, listen to us instead.
We got this. Just listen to us. We're going to give you the deep dive into this franchise leading up. And again, it's the spirit of the season. It's October. Everybody loves horror. Everybody loves the spooky stuff.
Right.
That's not to say we're going to be totally off base here.
This is for posterity's
sake. Exactly. This is for
me. They will go back to this series of podcasts decades from now for their grandchildren's benefit.
So the feed might be getting a lot of episodes coming up because we're also going to work in our Oscar sprint profiles of the big ones coming up. A Star is Born is going to be coming up soon. Right. First Man's going to be coming up soon. We have a lot of stuff in the pipeline. You're going to get a lot of Mike, and Oscar. You're going to get a lot of all the horror. You're going to get a lot of horror movies as well as Oscar movies. And listen, we love the month of October. We've been working up to it forever for this reason. We're big horror fans. You're getting the takes of an actual screenwriter, and you're getting the takes of a guy that's watched these movies back to back to back every year for enjoyment's sake. Never mind.
The greatest Halloween fanboy that's ever lived that didn't hug Jamie Lee Curtis on a Comic-Con stage.
Yes. But it's coming. It's coming is what I'm saying.
When I heard that fan hugged Jamie Lee... Mm-hmm. I was like, and that person said, "You saved my life."
Mm-hmm.
I had to do a double take. I was like, wait, did Mike go somewhere that I didn't know he went? I don't know about that guy's story. It might have been.
Oh, no, that was me. That was me. That was absolutely me. But we are going to be doing all Halloween for you. We're going to get deep into this retrospective.
Good.
And we're going to be mixing in the Oscar stuff along the way, guys. So hopefully it's going to give you shine a light. It's going to give you a lot of value, a lot of stuff that you're not going to hear anywhere else, and a lot of serious takes and comedic takes.
And the casualty of all this, we'll just tell you now, is going to be our Netflix quarterly because...
Yes.
We're going to punt on Netflix. We'll do a mid-year kind of Netflix...
Six-month wrap-up.
Yeah. It's going to work because the Netflix stuff hasn't been that substantive. You haven't clicked on it as much as we thought, we hoped. So just wait till the end of the year. We'll do a six-month wrap-up on Netflix. Also, we'll review 80 movies in one episode. Because we've been doing 40 an episode. There's going to be 80 movies.
That's true.
Or 60
That's
maybe.
True. So look forward to that.
Because I see them all. I have no life.
So look, guys, we're ramping up. This is big. This is the season. Tis the season of The Witch, of Michael Myers, of horror.
Season of the Witch.
And we're going to give you all that you can handle and hopefully more.
A lot more.
Michael, any final words of wisdom here?
The real evil of Halloween 3 Season of the Witch is that a TV has more than two channels.
It's so stupid.
And yes, that all the major networks aren't connected to one phone line that a crazed doctor can call and be like, hey, listen, CBS, ABC, NBC, Fox, I would like to not see this.
Customer service back in the early 80s at those television networks. Just the greatest it has ever been. The greatest.
Guys, reality sucks. Keep watching movies and killing those babysitters with us. And we will see you very, very shortly for the Laurie Strode Halloween line.
See ya.